Hi there, welcome to the Deep Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Edwards, and today we're continuing on with our five-episode series on the levels of consciousness. Today we are covering the conventional levels of consciousness. We won't be discussing what the levels of consciousness are or what pre-conventional or post-conventional are. If you want to hear about that, go and listen to the other episodes in this series, which are numbered 151 to 155, and you will hear about all the other details. I would recommend you do that after this one because, wow, the conventional levels are so crucial to understanding the state of the world, the people around you, your own life journey. Without this, your life makes a lot less sense to you. There are three conventional levels we're going to be covering. The two main ones are blue conformist, also called absolutist and also given the label or color amber. Ken Wilber usually gives it the color amber. And the other main one is orange achiever or rational. There's a transitional level, so it's a level that comes between blue and orange, and that's called the expert level, which we'll cover briefly today. Blue and orange are the two dominant levels of development in the world at the moment, and it's interesting because the fact that they are so prevalent makes it seem like they aren't really levels of development. They're just how human beings are. But once you've learned about them, you'll realize that no, the way we are is because we're mostly centered at blue and orange. And that's why learning about the levels of consciousness is so powerful. As I mentioned in episode 151, what are the levels of consciousness? It basically lights up the deeper structures behind ordinary human life in a way that nothing else really does. Many people you know will be centered at blue or orange for their entire adulthood. You yourself will spend a significant or will have spent a significant amount of time at blue and orange. You can see them in your own life trajectory quite unmistakably. They just, wow, it's so hard to overstate how important it is to learn about that. So what we're going to start with is talking about why they are called conventional, because last week we spoke about pre-conventional. I told you why they're called pre-conventional levels. Why are they all grouped together into that sort of meta level? Let's do that with conventional just after a quick message from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code ROSS on the booking page linked below. So, why are these levels called the conventional levels? Well, it's quite simple, really. It's because, according to Susan Kuttgreuter, who's a developmentalist I really respect, according to her data, 75% of the world's population is centered at blue or orange. So that's why it's conventional, because it's the most common, it's the most visible, and it's really, it's essentially normal, it's to be expected, and these levels are sort of implicitly used as a goal for development in education, and they're all over the place in the workplace and so on. So it's just, they're so prevalent that they basically sort of define for most people what it means to be a developed adult. And going beyond that is not very common. Just because, you know, the surround that you're in defines a lot of the time, it defines what development is available to you. So if you're in an environment where blue and orange are prevalent, which is pretty much the entire world, well, it's going to be, people at post-conventional are not going to be very common. This is where, sort of, when you're at a conventional level, you are considered to be a civilized, socialized, rational, and logical adult. And as I said about the goals of education, these are some of the main goals of education, is to produce adults of this kind. Whereas at pre-conventional, you're actually sort of learning to be civilized, to be socialized, to use rational thinking, to use logic and so on. These things are beyond you until you reach conventional development. It's also called conventional because if you're at these levels, your worldviews, your values, your motivations and so forth are pretty much derived from the environment that you are in. And what this means is that you basically fit in to the general mass of people, to the conventional human life, shall we say. So that's why it's conventional. When you're at this level, you basically resemble the average of society. That might sound judgmental. It really wasn't meant to sound like that. It's just how it is. Let's look now at the actual features of conventional levels more specifically. Just before we do, I just want to say that I encourage you to subscribe to my podcast on Apple or Spotify, where you will find long form episodes every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. UK time, 9 p.m. Central European time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, and I have snippets at the same time on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday. And if my podcast resonates with you, you can follow my fortnightly newsletter to follow my latest thinking. You'll find a link in the description to that, and you'll find my books at that same link if you want to go very deep with my work. And again, I really encourage you to listen to the entire Levels of Consciousness series from this month, July 2026. The numbers are 151 to 155. We're currently on 153. So let's talk about the features of conventional levels. One thing really important is like the age. We've spoken about age a lot in this series, that it doesn't define where you are by any means, but it sort of defines a certain threshold. In terms of conventional levels, most people, once they reach age 12 or so, are in a conventional level of development. I would say age 12 to about 15, you're in blue, and then orange starts to become available. But listen, that's a generalization. It doesn't mean that, I would say it's very unlikely you're going to advance beyond conventional by the time you're 12 years old. Like, usually post-conventional comes online at best in your 20s. However, you can remain at pre-conventional your entire life, and you may develop into conventional later on in life. So these things are guides. I mean, it's not like a rigid thing, but mostly once you're about 12, there's a good chance you're going to be fairly established at a conventional level. At the conventional levels, the world is experienced as material, linear, physical, separate from oneself and containing independently existing objects. So this paradigm, I could go into this paradigm so much, so I'm going to have to hold myself back. But this paradigm is like the default epistemological paradigm of humanity, and it's no surprise because most of humanity is at conventional. So basically how most people see the world is that they're a person that is a physical human being living in a world that's physical around them, and everything that is not the body and not their own mind is separate from them. That's just the paradigm of the conventional level. And it's interesting because once we associate that paradigm with a certain meta level of human consciousness, we realize that it's not the default. We actually have to grow up to the point where we perceive the world like that. And perhaps there's further to go beyond experiencing the world in such a way. The conventional levels tend to see different people as simply having made different life choices or having different genetics or personality. They don't tend to see the developmental dimension or like the cultural background or dimension of people. And it's interesting because when you sort of look at how we understand people in general, sort of in everyday terms, that's pretty much how we describe people, you know. we sort of talk about them as if they're just like a different kind of person, or they're just sort of built a different way. We don't realize that people are actually at genuinely different levels in their growth as people, and that's something that conventional doesn't really see very well. It tends to see its own culture and worldview as inherently superior to those of others. This is particularly true at a conformist blue conformist level, as we will look at in plenty of detail. And it's interesting because, 80% of the world, or 75% of the world, is at conventional. So, and all of them think that their own culture, their own worldview, their own sort of inherited points of view are the best. Now, obviously, that can't be true. So it's, you know, not if 80% of the world think it, then obviously 80% of the world must be wrong as well, because they all think they're superior to each other, which can't be the case. It's a sleight of hand. It's like a psychological sleight of hand that is necessary for the conventional levels to exist. It sees its own way of living as a default, the most obvious, the expected way, down to things even as simple and mundane as things like clothing, diet, parenting styles, career, and so on. Like, really most aspects of life, it just sees them as how it is and how it should be, not realizing that much of this is completely contextual. Like, if you'd been brought up in a different country, or you were living in a different country, it would be very different. And not realizing that most of it is just unconsciously inherited. It's just something that you've been brought up with and that you've never looked at. You've never had a perspective on it. The conventional levels, there's a, you know, the word conventional implies fitting in, you know, fitting in to the convention, to what is expected. And certainly the conventional levels want to fit in with, like, the general sort of standards or ways of living of society. But it's not just that it fits in, it needs to fit in. It actually derives its identity from fitting in. Like, the conventional level can't exist within you if you don't fit in. And so when you're going through them, you have a very strong need to do that for your own psychological kind of needs to be met at that particular level. Conventional people tend to have ordinary goals, ordinary interests, an ordinary worldview, and ordinary views on things like politics, diet, science, medicine, philosophy, education, and so on and so forth. This doesn't mean that all conventional people agree with one another. That is certainly not true. Obviously, 75% of our world doesn't all agree with each other. That is obviously not true. But what they're basically doing is they're disputing different conventional frames. Like, if you get two people from the same country, one from one political party, one from the other, chances are they're conventional, at conventional level of development, just statistically, that's the most likely. And they might disagree quite strongly on different aspects of politics and society and government and so on, but they're just disputing different conventional frames. They're not coming from different structures of mind. So you have to develop the nuance to detect when disagreement is actually coming from different levels of consciousness, and when it's just occurring within the same level of consciousness but from different people. You know, conventional people can adhere to very different structures and sort of like worldviews, but and they can disagree with one another on the worldviews, but their mind, their psyche, is still conventional. If you look at a conventional person, what you'll see is it's like they're kind of acceptable, they're normal, they're nothing extravagant. You know, they're not like, they don't tend to be criminals. They tend to be decent people who follow the rules, follow the laws, and they live ordinary lives. And they're quite obviously similar to other people that live in the same society as them, or the same country, or part of the same religious group or whatever. It's like, I don't want to generalize too much, because obviously once you start looking for differences in people, you can certainly find them, but it's like they're just fundamentally, they are very similar to the people that live in the same surround as them. At conventional, the self is established as an independent, well-defined person with a sense of identity, and this reaches its peak at the achiever level. Remember that at pre-conventional, you don't even have a sense of identity, and you can't recognize other people as being other people. You don't perceive them as having their own identity and their own needs and their own wants and so on. Once you get to conventional, you're here, and this is really what enables you to function well in society. In other words, what we could say is that the self has been successfully constructed, and you now live from within the self. You take the self to be real and all important. And this is true even though, for example, the blue level is more other-oriented and the orange level is more self-oriented. But fundamentally, both of them have a strong sense of self, and it's taken to be real and all-important, right? If you're conventional, other conventional people, they might not like you, they may not agree with you, but they more or less agree that you are essentially a normal person, like an ordinary person. Whereas conventional people, will, if you're pre-conventional or post-conventional, they'll tend to see you as quite unusual because they're comparing you to their own psyche, which is conventionally structured. It's structured around a conventional stage. It's not just like the content is different. It's like the structure is different. It's like a different structure that you're working from. And so there can be a gap there that's difficult to bridge. Let's talk now about the first conventional level in a lot of detail. And this is called blue conformist, also called absolutistic. We'll understand why in a minute. And also given the color amber by Ken Wilber. So blue conformist is when we first become conventional. This is the height of conformist behavior, hence the name conformist, tends to come online in primary school, and in children it shows up as like wanting to be good children or students for the teachers, for the parents, for authority figures. They're terrified of punishment. They take rules as being absolute, and they take satisfaction from playing by the rules. Here we become aware of behavior and its consequences in a way that pre-conventional is not. We have a strong sense of right and wrong behavior. We tend to dichotomize behavior, and we think if I break the rules laid down from above, whether that's teachers or whether that's religion or whether that's your parents, you think that you're bad, and if you follow the rules, you're good. You can't yet question the rules. You absolutize the rules. Here we view the self as fixed and traits as inherited, and we find it, for that reason, we find it really difficult to change, because change is not yet viewed as growth or expansion, but really as death of the self, as transgression, as going against the norm, as a threat to normality. And here is where we start to think things like that talent causes skill rather than practice. Here's a good, an interesting viewpoint on the blue conformist level. So a person very close to me, I believe, is essentially blue conformist. Like, that's where their psyche is. And it's funny because when I go home, I don't live in the place I was brought up. When I go home, I always ask this, we end up talking with I talk with this person about people that are from where I was, and there's always bits and pieces, like bits of gossip and stuff. And I always ask, like, how's this friend doing or that other friend doing? And it's interesting because this person seems to always respond that this person that I'm asking for is just the same. He's just the same. She's just the same. And it's interesting because 10 years may have passed since I've seen that person, So obviously they're not going to be the same in important ways, but it's like a certain, it feels like a comforting answer, and it feels like a kind of, I might be wrong about this, this is just how it comes across. It feels like a safety blanket that they're using to sort of reassure themselves that nothing has changed, right? And this is like a very blue conformist thing, because it wants stability, it wants this, it views the self as fixed, it views the others, it views other people as fixed as well, of course, and anything that might put that into question is a bit of a threat, really. So let's move on to the key aspects of the conformist level. Once we're done with this, you're going to really understand the conformist level very well. So first key aspect is that this level operates with concrete operational thinking. This is a topic that I kind of dread talking about, because a lot of the time, if you read about concrete operational thinking, it's explained in extraordinarily academic terms, and it's like so difficult to get a grasp on what it means. So I've tried my best to like make it very tangible for you. Concrete operational thinking, if you're operating from this, you tend to be more skilled with concrete physical objects than with abstractions and generalizations. For example, a concrete operational person will be better at repairing a car than designing a car. They work better with specific, tangible examples or cases rather than general theories or broad conclusions. For example, how a single plant grows, say, in the garden, versus how a genus of plants grows in a range of environments. Concrete operational prefers the already existing to the hypothetical, and in fact it struggles to work with the hypothetical. And it understands symbols literally, and it finds it difficult to understand symbols as abstractions or as representations of non-conceptualizable realities. Let me give you a very concrete example, right? If you show a concrete operational person a picture of Jesus Christ, whether they're religious or not is not important, they will tend to interpret that as an actual picture of who Jesus was, or a representation of who Jesus was as an actual human being, and they won't understand any sort of symbolism of Jesus Christ whatsoever. Look, this might seem quite impractical, this concrete operational thing. What I'm saying is, I'm talking about the person's way of thinking about the world and of understanding how things are related to one another is very concrete, and it struggles with abstract and with the abstract and the conceptual. If it seems impractical to you, look for it around you, and if you're beyond concrete operational, this form of thinking will seem very limited to you, and it will seem like the person is missing out on huge chunks of reality, which isn't wrong. Another crucial feature of the conformist level is that it's absolutistic. So what does this mean? It means that it's one-minded, it's monoperspectival, in other words, it clings to one perspective and it absolutizes it. In other words, it makes that perspective the only true perspective. For example, right, and a conformist person tends to think there is one correct political party, there's one right sports team to follow, there's one right religion, there's one right worldview, there's one right cuisine, and all others are inferior to that. It also thinks in terms of very strong dichotomies, like good and evil. So a particular action is good or evil. You know, abortion is good or evil, end of story. Or sex before marriage is either good or evil. It thinks another dichotomy is correct and incorrect, like the answer you give on a test is either it's correct or it's incorrect. Or they will think, you know, the way they describe people is very dichotomizing as well. You know, you're either a Christian or you're not a Christian. This is funny because I've got a family that I wouldn't say they're religious now, but certainly their background is religious. And one of them asked me if I was Christian, or if I don't know what the context was. I think we were talking about like getting married in a church or something like that. And I said that I wouldn't get married in a church because I'm not a Christian, and I wouldn't be a hypocrite and stand there and, you know, whatever it is you do, recite hymns and you know, swear to God that you're going to be together forever and all that stuff. I was like, I couldn't do that because I'm not going to be a hypocrite and pretend that I'm Christian when I'm not. And then they asked, so you don't believe in God then? And I said, no, I do believe in God. And well, I don't know if I said I believe in God, because that doesn't quite nail it either, but it doesn't matter. You know, their whole thing was, we want to say you're Christian or you're not Christian. And it's quite a conformist thing, because it thinks black and white. It thinks in terms of dichotomies. And another sort of example of this is how it relates to rules, which I spoke about, is it's sort of like how a child sees rules once they're at a certain age. It's like they have a very strong, rigid attitude towards them. It's like rules are defined absolutistically what is to be done and what is not to be done. It sees them as shoulds, as like a moral thing, and if someone doesn't follow the rules, they should be punished for not following the rules. So that's the absolutism of conventional. Not only that, it's ethnocentric. So this ties in with the absolutism, because it's not just that the person is one-minded and monoperspectival about things, and things like politics and sports and religion and worldview and all this. It's that these things are tied to one's ethnicity, which may seem really obvious, but you could imagine someone being absolutistic and in this not being the case, but it typically is the case with conformist, blue conformist. So, you know, it's not just that they believe that that there's a certain group of people whose worldview is correct. It tends to be my people, you know, the people from my country, my religion, the people from with the same sexual orientation as I have. You see, it's a very kind of it's self-centered in the sense that it's about one's group, one's own group and their views and those being the right ones. So it's absolutistic and it's ethnocentric. It takes a group's truths, the one that the person belongs to, the groups that the person belongs to, it absolutizes them as the best. And this is interesting because the way that blue conformist relates to truth is not via objective evidence, it's not via what is reasonable, it's not via what is observable, it's not via what matches our experience. It's actually evaluated more on fit, meaning does it fit with, you know, what my people believe or what my country believes or what how things are done in my religion and so on, and what does my religion say. That's how truth is evaluated. It's evaluated in terms of what is conventionally accepted, which is quite startling. Like, just think about that. That's one reason why science people, like religious people, cannot accept science, because their way of evaluating truth is not via objective evidence, it's via how it fits with their religion. Now that seems obvious, but just think about that. Think about how impossible it is to convince someone about science when that's their way of evaluating truth is simply different from like a scientist, how a scientist would do, for example. Give you another example, and this is one that's quite, present in my life, is imagine you ask someone like, what is healthy? What's a healthy diet, right? A conformist person won't tell you about vitamins and minerals and, you know, the different food categories and having a balanced diet and having five a day. They're more likely, actually, to basically say that their country's cuisine is the best, or their family's cuisine, or the cuisine that they grew up with is the best, right? Like, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating that they're, it's literally like their way of evaluating truth is very different. Of course, another key aspect of the blue conformist is its conformity. I've actually, in my second book that I'm currently writing at the moment, my second published one anyway, I've got plenty on Amazon as well, but one way I describe the conformist level is to call it plug and play. What I mean by this is, basically, if you want to live successfully at blue conformist, you don't actually have to construct your worldview consciously. What you can basically do is use the pre-installed software, like use everything you inherit from your surround, your family, your upbringing, your country, your school, your religious upbringing, everything that you've been sort of programmed, a bit of a harsh word, but it's the word that's usually used. Everything that you've been programmed with, just take that and run with it for the rest of your life. That's what you can do at Blue Conformist. And that's what a lot of people do at Blue Conformist. They simply take what they've been brought up with and that's the rest of their life. So it's plug and play. You know, if you get something that's plug and play, you plug it in, you don't have to do anything else, and off you go. So that's a good analogy for what the Blue Conformist level does. In terms of the conformity, if you think about like how a conformist person experiences subject and object, like me and not me, they are differentiated, so the person will perceive their body as being separate from the world around them, they'll perceive their own mind as being unique and separate from other minds. But it's like, yes, that's true, but and they realize that their personality is differentiated and it's not the same as that of other people, and it feels like it is theirs. There's a sense of ownership. Remember, at pre-conventional, this is not a given. This doesn't occur at pre-conventional. If you're wondering why this is such a big deal, this does not happen at pre-conventional. However, the actual contents of their personality is simply the contents of the surround that they're in, right? It's like their nation, their religious group, whatever. It's like their personality, they do have a personality, but actually all their likes and their motivations, their dislikes, their worldview is just, it's all absorbed through conformity. It's not actually been put through any like conscious process. James Fowler has a name for this. It's called tacit. He calls them like a tacit worldview is a worldview that is not examined. And this is a very good way of describing the blue conventional conformity. It feels a strong pressure to fit in, but this isn't experienced as a burden. So this is kind of a paradox. Like, you really want to fit in, and obviously it can be painful when you want to, but you don't. But it's experienced as a genuine need. It's not experienced as like a conflict, okay? Because the person is trying to establish themselves in like their conventional surround, right? And so that is the need that they are expressing. It's not experienced as a burden. They want to actively follow the rules. They want to actively conform to what is expected of them in whatever role they are occupying. Wilbur actually calls it the real role mind. That's what he calls a blue sort of psyche. He calls it the real role mind because one's identity is built from the roles that they occupy and the rules defining how they should occupy the role. So it's, in that sense, it's sort of plug and play. You know, what is expected of me as a mother in my culture, in my country? What is most often done? What is like socially accepted? That's going to be how I live out the reality of being a mother. That's how I'm going to do it. There's a respect for hierarchy, authority, birth, duty, and background. So you'll notice with conformist people, they sort of respect social hierarchies, professional hierarchies. They have a sort of reverence for their background, for their roots, all in a way that is in a way that prevents them from questioning deeply, like, why their upbringing was the way it was or why their country is the way it is. It's sort of just an automatic respect, which is a nice thing, but can be limiting as well. Finally, the final aspect of the conventional blue conformist level is that it has a second person perspective. So this is a perspective that is larger than the pre-conventional perspectives, which are either zero person or first person. At the second person perspective, you realize that other people are their own people with their own views, needs and desires, which is not true of pre-conventional levels. You can coordinate your own perspective with that of others, and this all means that you can understand how your own behavior affects other people, and then you're able to follow rules or guidelines that tell you how to how to basically live harmoniously with other people, whereas pre-conventional this simply isn't possible. So that is like the core of the blue conformist level. Now, I know that's a lot of information, but remember, most human beings are here. Like, this is how their psyche is constructed. It's constructed around all these different aspects. And so if you understand this, you see blue conformist in yourself, you see it in other people, and you see it just in humanity as a whole, in human affairs, well, your understanding of human beings is going to be a lot stronger if you really in sort of take the time to study and to absorb what conventional actually, sort of what blue conformist actually means. Now we're going to look at the transition level between blue and orange. Just before that, a quick message from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru, and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code ROSS on the booking page linked below. So let's talk about the transition stage between blue and orange. So I'm going to call it blue/orange, and this is called the expert phase. At least this is what Suzanne Cook-Greuter calls it. We'll just talk about the main features of this one quite quickly. So this comes between sort of blue conformity, remember, and orange individuality. And so the individual is sort of breaking out of conformity and into sort of, what's the word, self-authorship, it's often called. So the person is leaving behind inherited knowledge, and now they want to be seen as the one who knows, the one who learns on their own, the one that picks up facts. And this is one of the defining features of this stage, as you may have guessed from the title, expert, is that much of their identity is built around accumulating facts. Now, these facts tend to be about tangible, concrete things. So they will want to accumulate knowledge about things like, I don't know, fruit or walking routes or architecture or how machines work. You see, very concrete, tangible things, right? And this is one of the main features of their psyche, as strange as that might sound. It fits in with the transition from blue, sort of inherited knowledge, to orange, learning and improvement. Knowledge is valued more than application. So what you'll see with experts is that, and I've seen this in experts who are very close to me actually, is that they can know a lot of things about a certain topic. Like, let's say diet. You know, in the abstract, they will know a lot about diet. But then if you look at their actual diet, it can leave a lot to be desired, because the knowledge isn't used for application primarily. Primarily it's used to buttress their identity and to give them the sense that they know and that they are discovering things for themselves. On the other side, you know, they can get very touchy about this lack of knowledge, and they have quite a fragile sense of self-esteem because they depend on this knowledge and these facts that they accumulate. as soon as you go in there and you question them, well, quite obviously, they're going to feel threatened by that. And this is one of the things about experts. It's very difficult to like have an objective conversation about whether something is true or not. What you'll notice is they go into defensive mode very quickly and they get offended that you would question their knowledge. And this isn't a reflection on the knowledge itself. It's actually a reflection on their own need to be right. The sort of underlying rationale of the expert stage is that to get somewhere and be respected, I must know. So that's just a transition stage from blue to orange. Now let's go to orange. And this is, again, one of the most dominant levels in the world. It's really the basis for modern life. It's the basis for modern economics. It's the basis for the modern work world, which is starting to crumble now, but you know, certainly for the last sort of 50, 100 years, it's been the basis of that. It is just so prevalent, like, again, so prevalent that you may not even realize that it's a stage of development. In fact, if you've studied developmental theory, you probably don't, because it just seems like the norm. So it's called achiever, and it's also often called rational. And the reason for that is because, well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's basically to do with the person's underlying worldview, their motivations, and the way that they make sense of life and the way they relate to truth is based around achievement, and it's based around rationality. When does it come online? Well, it often comes online in high school, particularly towards the end. But again, there's no guarantee. Certainly most of, like, a huge chunk of the world's population, if we think that 75% are at conventional levels as a whole, then perhaps, you know, perhaps 35 to 40% of all people in the world are at blue, and the remaining sort of 30% are at orange. Like, it's, so there's no guarantee that you make it to orange, but if you do, it often comes online in high school. You can often see the emergence of orange in people during like crises of faith, where they question like their inherited religious views, they question religious absolutism, and they start to like evaluate truth in a very different way. Though a crisis of faith is not necessarily indicative of blue to orange, it is true that blue to orange often expresses itself as a crisis of faith. As adolescents, what this shift looks like into orange means a shift from conforming to achieving and career building, a shift away from just following the rules at school and trying to be a good girl or a good boy, to learning, properly learning, to getting interested in things like science, to get interested in abstract learning, and to developing skills and improving oneself. This is a self-oriented stage, in contrast to blue, which is other-oriented. You know, it's more about fitting in and deriving one's identity from their surround. This is a self-oriented stage, so it's more about defining your own identity. However, it's still conventional. Like an orange person will strive to improve themselves constantly, but all within a conventional frame. Like, their idea of what it means to improve as a person is still a conventional, like, it's a, built on conventional meanings and so forth. So their focus also tends to be on conventional achievement, hence the word achiever. It's an achiever, but it's done in a conventional context. So, you know, for example, if you're an achiever in America, like an orange achiever level of consciousness in America, then what that means is that you're going to be pursuing money, status, possessions, and options in life, and so on and so forth, right? So it's centered around achievement, but it's centered around doing it in a way that is conventional. And what that means in modern world is what I just said, things like money, status, and so on. And the person tends to see the world as a leaderboard. It's like, who's got the most money, the most status, the best job title, the best possessions, the biggest house, and so on and so forth. That's how, that is literally how they evaluate what the worth of a person, essentially. And just a reminder, many people never reach achiever or rational. And in fact, a good chunk of people I know haven't, in my opinion, reached orange achiever rational. So let's look at the main features, like the key defining features. One is that it's world-centric. So this is a huge shift from the blue level, which is ethnocentric. What it means to be world-centric at orange, because in the next stage that we're going to cover next week, which is green, is also world-centric, but it's world-centric in a different way. What it means at world-centric, to be world-centric at orange, is you sort of lose your knee-jerk rejection of other countries and cultures and systems. You don't inherently see other ethnicities, for example, as inherently inferior. You may well see them as being underdeveloped or not having enough technology or medicine or being frozen in time, but not necessarily inferior, just lacking the means of like more developed people, for example. It also means not either openly advocating for, say, minority groups, nor demonizing them. It's more like a live and let live attitude. It's kind of like, you do your thing and we'll do our thing. We're not going to trample on you, but, you know, we're also not going to go out there and fight for you. So it's a step above the blue conformist, but it's still a bit below what we're really striving towards in today's society, which is like genuine, active advocacy of minority groups, for example. It also means to begin to value coexistent and to perceive human universals, which eventually leads to real pluralism at post-conventional levels. I just want you to stop right there and like see the power of this, to perceive human universals. Like, at a certain point in human history, we didn't perceive humans as even being a single race. Like, for most of human history, and this goes for cultures all across the world, this is not limited to any culture, all cultures saw people from other cultures as inferior and almost and not even as being human. And within cultures, this also happened. Like, people with less money were seen as inferior, as almost like a different species. Children were seen as like the possession or the property of the parents, for example. And this was literally how they were like accounted for by the government, whereas as like literally as like the litter of the parents. And so basically there's a dehumanizing, what we would call that is dehumanizing people. And that only begins to drop off at orange. Once people reach an orange level, they start to realize that every human on this planet should have human rights, and they are a human being, even if they are very different from me. And if you don't see the depth of that, I just encourage you to sit and like contemplate that. That is actually an emergent. That is not a given. And it's something we take for granted nowadays as being a given when it actually isn't. Moving on. The person is now capable of formal operational thinking, a step up from concrete operational thinking. And basically the way I used sort of examples and features that I use to define concrete operational get sort of flipped on their head at formal operational. Sorry, the things I used to define concrete operational are now flipped on its head at formal operational. So a form-op person is able to work fluently with abstractions, concepts, and generalizations. For example, designing a car versus repairing a car. To design a car, you need to think in the abstract. You need to think in terms of concepts. You need to think in terms of things that don't exist yet. Like if you're designing a new car, the car doesn't exist yet. The design is completely imaginary until it's actually made. That is what formal operational can do, whereas concrete operational struggles with that. It's comfortable with broad conclusions and high-level knowledge, which it will then make concrete, whereas concrete operational struggles with such things. It wants examples, it wants step-by-step, it wants like physical references for things. FormOp people like to operate within the hypothetical and then design schemes to work towards it. So it's more future thinking, more thinking in terms of if we take these actions for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, if we plan towards certain objectives, then we will improve the world, we will bring about a better world. If we don't do that, that's not going to happen. Concrete operational struggles with that. It pays attention to symbols that are precise and clearly defined, or will reduce symbols to being precise and clearly defined. In other words, it fits symbols into concepts and into like a rational framework, all connected by logic, right? So if you show like a formal operational person a photo of Jesus, they will they're not going to probably tell you stories about Jesus, and they're also not going to have like a deeper interpretation of what Jesus actually means. In a symbolic way, they're going to reduce it to facts and what is objective and what is logical and rational, and they're going to give it like a very precise and clear definition. So it's like it's a different relationship to symbols themselves. They tend to prefer like things like mathematical symbols because they're much more well defined than something like an image of Jesus is, for you know, just for example. So formal operational in general prefers a hypothetical. It's comfortable with abstractions and concepts, and then once they've worked at that level, they will bring it down into the practical. Whereas concrete operational, much better with the practical and the concrete and the immediate. Before we talk about why this is called the Achiever level, a quick message from my sponsor, Spirit Quest Tours, which takes small groups on exclusive sacred journeys to Egypt, Peru, and Turkey. Get $500 off your next trip by using the discount code ROSS on the booking page linked below. So why is this level called the Achiever level? Well, one thing that's really important is how orange views itself. So blue sees itself as fixed. Orange sees itself as changeable and improvable. And the time horizon for this, it tends to see a time horizon of about 5 to 10 years, right? So when it's thinking about the fact that self can be changed and improved, it's thinking 5 or 10 years. And what it does is it understands that change and improvement in terms of material gain, in terms of how its status will improve, how its means, like its financial means will improve, how its appearance will improve, its possessions, how much possessions it has, whether it's the right sort of brand and so on. And overall, just in terms of like its image of how prosperous and successful it is. So when you're, if you sort of see people who are very obsessed with portraying an image of prosperity and success, they're most likely at the Achiever, because this is what they're invested in. This is like literally, that's what their psyche is constructed as. The Achiever seeks its own interests, but still in a conventional context, as we mentioned. So they're Achiever in the sense that they set their own goals, and they define how they want to live life. You know, they'll define by themselves what clothes they want to wear and what like watch they want and what car they want. But even though they're doing this, actually it's still pretty conformist, like it's conventional. You see, they're still working within the paradigm of like accumulating possessions and so on and so forth. There's nothing particularly original about it. The achiever can look back and notice how one's actions created their past selves, and they project this mechanism forward to predict the future self based on their current actions. So basically what this means in very simple language is they understand that what they do now influences who they become. So they get very good at identifying what they're doing now, changing that, and doing so in a way that will create a better self 5 or 10 years down the line. They assume that happiness is to be found this way, in other words, by achieving and by improving themselves. You'll often find that the orange person's attention is focused outward on action and accumulation, as you would assume that an achiever is. The final crucial aspect of the orange achiever level is its rationality. In fact, rational is often a descriptive term used for this level. So why is this? First of all, because its key criterion for truth is whether a phenomenon can be reasonably explained with reference to observable processes that form a logical sequence. For example, right, if you asked a rational person what is the age of the earth, well, they'd say, well, scientists have observed that if you look at the... I'm just laughing because this is just hilarious for some reason. If you look at the outer reaches of the universe, we can see that the light coming from those outer reaches is... Ah, shit, you got me. How old is it? 13 billion years, apparently. The light from these distant reaches is 13.8 billion years old. Therefore, it means that that light was created 13.8 billion years ago, which means that the universe must be 13.8 billion years old. I think I got that one right. You see, it's a reasonable explanation. It's referring to observable processes, you know, not dogma, not what we read in the Bible. It's an observable thing. You know, you get your telescope and you can get your gear out and you can measure how old this light is. I know it's more complicated than that, by the way, but it's observable. And it forms a logical sequence. You know, the light appears to be 13.8 billion years old. Therefore, it was created that long ago. Therefore, that's when the universe first appeared. You know, it's logical. Seems very stupid and simple if you are rational, but remember that all the levels up to this point do not think in this way. The way that a convent, like a blue conformist, understands the age of the earth is not this way. So you cannot force this on them, and that's one of the things that scientific people do not understand. It's not that they are choosing not to believe. It's like they literally do not understand the world in the same way that you do. Any truth that can be explained in this way, in other words, in the rational way that I just described, may be accepted. So that's one good thing about the rational level. It's less dogmatic. In other words, if you can, like, prove, using the criteria that I just explained, if you can prove that something is true, they will accept it if there's enough reasonable proof there. However, any truth that doesn't meet this criteria is often dismissed outright or put on the shelf for later. And it can be very dogmatic about this because it assumes that something needs to be objectively provable in order to be true, not realizing that that itself is just a standard. You cannot prove that that standard is true in and of itself. It's just the rational standard, right? So this is like one of the limits of the orange rational level, is that its own truth criterion eats itself alive, right? And you'll see this when we talk about post-conventional next week. Post-conventional goes beyond this rigid truth criterion. And in fact, the rational person can actually, quite ironically, become very dogmatic about how they decide what is true and not true. They become very dogmatic about rationality, which is very irrational, quite ironically. The rational person is not so interested in tradition, inherited truth, or institutional truth, but just in demonstrable facts. They will say things like, prove it, or where's your evidence? They will tend to see any spiritual life as based on belief, because God is unprovable within its paradigm. Therefore, spirituality as a whole is doubted, and we end up with materialism, naive realism, and the abandonment of religion and spirituality. So, wow, I'm sure that if you look, you will see the orange rational achiever level in yourself. Because listen, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably surrounded by orange rational people, and you yourself most likely have either there, centered there, or you've been there, or it still lives on inside you very much. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, I'm just saying that that's how it is. So I really encourage you to take all this on. This is literally a description of like a huge chunk of the human population. This is where they are. This is where they are in their development. And even more broadly, the conventional levels as a whole, blue, orange, and orange, this is where 75%+ of humanity is at this point in human history. And understanding these will greatly accelerate your understanding of humanity as a whole, not to mention yourself. So, just a reminder, I've got new long-form episodes every Wednesday, with snippets on Thursday, Sunday and Tuesday, all at 9 p.m. Central European Time, 8 p.m. UK Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week we're going to be continuing on with this Levels of Consciousness series for July 2026 with a discussion of the post-conventional levels. Make sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify. If this resonates, my fortnightly newsletter is the best place to follow my latest thinking. You'll find a link in the description, and in that same link, you'll find my books there as well if you want to go really deep. And again, no matter where you are, no matter if you're still in the year 2026 or not, I really encourage you to listen to the entire Levels of Consciousness series, which are episodes 151 to 155, for a full understanding of the levels of consciousness. I'm Ross, and I will see you next Wednesday for the next installment in this series. Take care.